During the week, there was some talk on different plane accidents that have happened throughout history. And as I was listening to some of it, it reminded me of a situation, a very strange situation back in 1994. There was a Korean airliner that came into land, skidded across the runway and crashed into some of the safety equipment. And what was it? And after they crashed, they were able to get all the people off, and then the people moved away from the plane, and then, sadly, the plane exploded into flame. But what was interesting wasn't the crash itself, in a way, but was the reason for the crash. They didn't crash because as they landed, there was bad weather or strong wind. They didn't crash because as they put on the brakes didn't work or anything like that. The cause? The pilot and the co-pilot got into a fist fight over who was in charge of the landing controls. And that is why the plane crashed. A fist fight that could have killed hundreds of people. And why? Because it was all over who was in charge. Does it matter who's in charge? Well, of course it does. It does matter. And the more I think about that question, who's in charge, we start to realize it's actually a really important question to know and be able to answer, not just for aeroplanes, but in all of life. Because if you don't know who's in charge, it can cause frustration, it causes confusion, and in the case of the plane, even worse things. Now, for example, think about families. If children don't know parents are in charge, there can be chaos in the household. Think of political parties. If they don't have a clear leader, a clear person in charge, then the party often goes nowhere and there's bedlam. I mean, look at our own federal system at the moment, and you've got a perfect example of that. In society, if police are not seen as being in charge, then it can lead to anarchy and chaos because anyone will think they can do anything at any time and hurt anyone else. It'd be anarchy. We often see it with sporting teams. If there are too many captains, in a sense, on the field, too many people making comments about things and giving orders, then no one else knows really who to follow. And so they don't play very well. Or maybe you've heard of the old saying that there are too many cooks in the kitchen, too many people giving orders, and no one's really understanding who's in charge in the kitchen. Knowing who is in charge is important. But why? See, I think it's important because we actually listen to the one in charge, don't we? If we know the police are in charge and we see the blue lights go on and the siren goes on behind us if we're driving, we pull over. So knowing who's in charge is important because we listen to the one in charge. But I also think the reverse is also true. If we look at who we listen to, I think that gives an idea of who we think is in charge. So, who do you listen to? Who do you think is in charge? If we listen to the one in charge, who's in charge of you? Is it one person? Is it more than one person? Is it someone else? Who might it be who's in charge? If you go to school, you might say it's the teacher or the principal. At work, it might be the boss. But what about at home? What about here at church? Who's in charge? Or maybe you think you're in charge of yourself. Who has authority to tell you to do right and wrong? When you think about our world, who's in charge of our world? Now, recently the G20 met and they were trying to solve some of the world issues and they think they're in charge. But are they? Now, regularly each week at the moment, we're told by President Trump that he's in charge of the world. But is he? Who's in charge? Who's in charge of this church? Is it me as the pastor? Is it the deacons? We're a Baptist church. We're led by the congregation. Are the congregation in charge? Or is it someone else? Now, this whole idea of we listen to the one who's in charge, or if we look at who we listen to, gives us an idea who we think really is in charge. I asked a few people, both inside and outside the church this last week, who they listen to. Some people said TV. A lot of people said they listen to social media, friends, family. You know, some people said they, you know, the old saying, money talks. They listen to their money. All they wanted to do is get money and possessions. But more often than not, the standard comment in asking people who do they listen to, who's in charge, the answer was themselves. They believed, you know, in a sense, that they were the center of the universe, that the world revolved around them. So who really is in charge? Now, most of you here today would say Jesus is in charge. But going back to the question I asked right back at the beginning of the service, do we actually live like that? Or realistically, we say that, those words come out of our mouth, but maybe we live showing that someone else is in charge. Remember, who we listen to gives us an idea of who we think really is in charge. So who are we listening to? And not just here on a Sunday when we come to church, but also during the week. Who do we listen to? Because it's a question, who's in charge, that not just us, but I think the church at Colossae was struggling with. Young church, trying to understand, what does it mean to follow Jesus, put him first, do all that sort of thing? And then they had some of the Jewish people, Jewish converts within the church saying, well, it has to be Jesus plus the law. It's Jesus plus something else. They had other teaching going around that was saying Jesus wasn't actually God, that he was not God's son, that maybe he'd been a good teacher when he was alive, but nothing else. Some other teaching going around the town of Colossae at the time was that angels and Jesus were the same. So for them, trying to work out, well, what does it mean to follow Jesus? Who is Jesus? You know, we've been told he's in charge, but then we've got all this other teaching going around. Is he really in charge? Who do we follow? And I think here at the end of chapter 1, Paul addresses that question for them, the issues that they were facing. And issues that we would say are a bit different for us today, but I think at the core, they're still the same. Who's in charge? And if we say it is Jesus, does our life show it? So what does Paul say here? I think he says three main things of why Jesus should be in charge and why we should be living lives to show it. First off is in verse 15 to 17. Let me read it to you again. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Paul says here, basically, that Jesus is the head of creation, and therefore, as the head of creation, he should be followed. But I wonder, have any of you had any Jehovah's Witnesses visit your house recently or know some Jehovah's Witnesses? Because for the J-Dubs, verse 15 here is one of their foundational, I would say, misinterpretations of the Bible. It's very something they hold on to very strongly, but they misinterpret it. See, they say that when it says here that he is the image, therefore Jesus cannot be God. He's only an image of. But the word image in the original language means exact replica of. They then go on and it says he's the firstborn over all creation. They say, therefore, he is created by God. He's not God. He's a created being. Now, for the J-Dubs, you probably know that they think Jesus is the archangel Michael, not the Son of God. But when it says here, you know, talks about being the firstborn, in the original language, it's taken from the idea in Psalm 89, where it says, when you talk about the kingship of David and his kingly line, that is the firstborn. That the word firstborn is used to describe the Messiah to come. That's the picture here. Firstborn in the day that Paul wrote in the Roman times meant the heir to the estate. It meant the person in the family with the greatest power. It meant the supreme one. Does that ring any bells? Read the very next verse in verse 18. If you go back to a couple of weeks to where we started this series, I said the theme verse for this series is chapter 1, verse 18, where it says, Jesus is supreme. My language, Jesus is number one. And because of that, why would the people in Colossae want to follow anyone else if he's number one? And so that's what Paul was saying here. Now, when he's the firstborn of creation, it means that he is the head of creation. Therefore, he should be in charge. Now, the other problem, I think, with the J-Dub's interpretation of verse 15 is that they then forget verse 16. Well, verse 16 says that Jesus is the creator of everything. Therefore, going from their logic, how can he be a created being and the creator of all things? Logically, it doesn't hold together. But Paul says he's the head of creation. He's the creator. All things were created through him and for him. Now, those words we've probably heard before. But do you actually get what Paul is saying? Do you get the awesomeness, the enormity of what he's actually saying there? So what he's saying here is when we think about Jesus now, Jesus is in heaven sitting at the right hand of God the Father. When he looks down on all creation, every bit of creation in the whole universe, every planet, every molecule, every atom, every one of you and me, every one of us, he can look over it all and say, mine, created through him, for him. Have you ever asked the question, why are you here? Have you ever asked the question, what's my purpose in life? This is the answer. Now, you are here, your purpose is for Jesus. This is why you were created, to love and to serve and follow the head of creation. And as we're going to celebrate when we come around to a time of communion, if we're reminded of how he did that for us, so that when we make the response to love and follow him because our sin has been dealt with by what he's done, then we can love and serve the head of creation. So to the church of Colossae, Paul says, remember who the head is of creation and get your priorities right. All this other teaching going around, Jesus plus things. Jesus is not the Son of God. He's not God. He doesn't have the power of God. He's an angel and all these other things. Paul says, forget about it. Know that he is the head of creation and therefore he should be the one in charge. He should be the one you try to live for. It's the same thing for us. If we know he is the head of creation, if we know all creation is made through him and for him, and we've responded to him, do we live like that? Do we actually live for the head of creation? Now, you might say, as a lot of people have throughout history, well, I can understand that he was the creator and he was in charge, but that was in the past. We don't see him anymore. He's in heaven. So he's not in charge anymore. Well, is he? I mean, look at verse 17. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the creator of all things, and he's also the sustainer of all things. He holds everything together today. Doesn't that fill you with joy? A great sense of peace and hope that there is someone in charge, that there is someone who is holding it all together, that you and I and daily life is not a cosmic accident. Our world is not run on Murphy's Law. Everything, even when we look at our world and think it's chaotic, God has it ordered. There's a purpose to it. He's under his control. Now that fills me with hope. That fills me with joy. That gives me assurance that I can know too that when God says things in his word, he will do it, that he will keep to it. Now, for us who've made the choice to love and follow him, from that moment, we can know for certain that we'll be in heaven. We have that assurance because everything is under his control. Now, you might say, as some people have said, okay, I can understand, Stephen, head of creation, yep, I can see he has control over creation, yes, but what about the church? Does he have control there? Is he in charge of the church? And I get asked this question often by people both inside and outside the church. You know, is the person with the most authority the one in charge of the church? Is it the person who has a special experience of God in charge of the church? Is it the person who's been in the church the longest who's in charge of the church? Is it the person who I've been told with in previous places who puts the most money in the offering plate is in charge of the church? Who's in charge? See, for the young church at the church in Colossae, they had to understand that. Who was in charge? Was it Epaphras who started the church? Was it Philemon in the house where the church met? Who's in charge? Well, verse 18, we see the answer. And he, Jesus, is the head of the body, the church. Now, I think most of us would have said, who's in charge of the church? Jesus, as head of the church. But I find interesting when you talk to some people in churches, they'll say, yeah, Stephen, I get that, but it's nice words, but who's really in charge? Who really has authority? Who really has the final say in the church? Is it Jesus or is it someone else? To the church in Colossae, Paul reminds them that Jesus is the head of the church. So when you have people within the church say, hey, let's do this, it's Jesus plus, let's do this, oh, Jesus is not the Son of God. You know, all those other teachings going around, Paul says, don't listen to them. They're not in charge of the church, Jesus is. So listen to him and follow him. See, what does it mean to us? You know, who has ultimate authority in this church? Is it me? No. Is it the deacons? Well, no. Again, as I said earlier, we're a Baptist church. The congregational government doesn't mean the majority of our members are in charge of the church. Well, no, because you can't actually outvote Jesus. Now, Jesus is the head of the church. You'll often hear me describe it as, you know, this isn't my church. This isn't Casino Baptist Church. This is God's local church. And we're a part of it. And because it's his church, we need to go to him to seek how to run things within the church. We seek his wisdom. We seek his knowledge. When it comes to thinking about what we do with our budget, supporting missionaries, outreaches, what the direction for God's church here might be into the future, where do we go to look for those answers? Jesus. We pray about it. We talk to other mature Christians about how we might be able to do different things. Do we actually, as a church, see Jesus as the head of the church? Or do we think it's somebody else? See, I think at times when churches lose that awareness that Jesus is the head of the church, then it's a bit like if you chop off the head of a chicken and it keeps running around for a while. I think when it happens in churches, there's lots of commotion, there's a lot of running around, but what do they actually achieve? What do they accomplish when they forget that Jesus is the head of the church? Because sometimes you see those churches, even when they try to do well-meaning things, it actually goes against what maybe Jesus wanted. It goes against what God's word says, because they're doing what they think is best for the church. Their way, their church, their decisions. And they leave Jesus and God out of the picture. You often know when we come to our church meetings and other things, I'll open in prayer, I'll talk about us praying through making choices. That's the challenge of remembering there is a head of the church. There is someone in charge. It's not me. It's not our deacons. Overall, it's Jesus. How much do we accomplish as a church? Paul challenges the church at Colossae. Jesus is in charge. Jesus is the head of creation. Jesus is the head of the church. Therefore, he should be followed. But he also gives him one final challenge. He says, remember, Jesus did something you could not do for yourselves. And because of that, he should be in charge and you should live like it. Verse 22. But now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. Jesus reconciles us to God. When you think of that word reconciliation, it's a beautiful word. It means there's a change from a hostile relationship to a friendly relationship. See, reconciliation reunites a broken relationship. Reconciliation is complete. It's restoration of something that was broken. It was a restoration of something that was actually good before, but then wasn't, but is now good again. And we notice here that reconciliation was initiated by God. See, God knew we were his enemy. God knew we couldn't fix our problem of sin. And so he did it for us. And when we come to the communion table in just a little while, that's what we remember in the different symbols that are there. Now, verse 21 puts it that we were far from God. And then God reconciled us to himself. He's in charge. He's in charge, and so he therefore did something about our sin. He offered forgiveness. And Paul says to the church at Colossae, this is where you started. This is what you were first remembering and believing what Jesus did for you. Don't forget it. Don't listen to the other teachings going around. Don't try to put anything above Jesus. Remember, he's in charge, not just the creator, not just the sustainer, not just the one who is the head of the church. But follow him, put him in charge, because you wouldn't be here in the church if it wasn't for him. Because he fixed your relationship or gave you the opportunity to have your relationship with God fixed through his death and resurrection. So the first step to challenge that church, the first step to challenge us, is have we actually been reconciled? Have we made the choice to love and follow him? Do we actually allow him to be in charge of us as individuals, as a church? Do we take our things to him in prayer? He's the creator, he's the sustainer, he's the savior. He's the head of the church. You can imagine Paul saying to the church at Colossae, is there anything else that compares? No. So why are you thinking about following someone else? To us, nothing else compares. Why would we ever be tempted to follow something else? So today I want us to really reflect as individuals and as a church. Who's in charge? Because our world is going to try to tell us that other people, other things should be in charge. Because remember, who we know is in charge is who we'll listen to. And then also to reflect, who are you listening to? because it shows who you think's in charge. Now, as we close, I just want to share a cute story I heard during the week about a young soldier who was on sentry duty for the first time, and his commanding officer gave him a very specific instruction. No one could enter a top secret base unless they had a certain special identification seal on the bumper of the car. He was on sentry duty one night. It was his first duty, and in the middle of the night, a general turns up in his car, and the general said, "Just let us through." But he didn't have this seal that he had to have on the bumper of his car. And so the sentry said, "No, I'm not allowed to let anyone in who doesn't have the seal." The general was getting a little bit cranky at this, being in the middle of the night and being called into the base. And so he said to his driver, "Just drive through. I'm the general. I'm in charge. Just drive through." The sentry put up his hand and said, "I'm sorry, General, I'm new to this. Who do I shoot first, you or the driver?" It gets you thinking, because he is right. Who is in charge? The general? He has the rank? No. The driver? No. The sentry? Almost. Who is in charge? The commanding officer of the sentry, the one who had as part of their control the safety of the base. He was in charge. The general tried to tell the sentry and the driver, he was in charge. Don't listen to the commanding officer, listen to him. And it's just like our world. Our world will tell us every day in different ways, don't listen to Jesus, he's not in charge. Look around the world at possessions. Look around the world at certain people and government leaders. They're the ones in charge. You know, there's other teachings, philosophies, theologies going around. Listen to those. They're in charge, not Jesus. Who's in charge of you? Who's in charge of us as a church? And as we live our life each day, who do we actually show is in charge? Let me pray. Gracious Lord, Father, I know at times we know in our head you are in charge, but maybe our lives don't show it. Father, forgive us for that. Forgive us at times when maybe as a church we don't show that you're in charge. But Lord, help us to get that right. As Paul challenged the church at Colossae, may we hear the same challenge. And as we go out into this week, may through your Spirit you help us to live the way you want us to live. And we offer this up to you in your name. Amen.